Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Stephen.
And that voice, Anna Vocino, guess what? She's sitting right here with us.
Sitting right here.
Yeah, baby.
Doing the voice.
We get her for another podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, well, which was another funny thing that happened today. As far as your listeners are concerned, it's the first funny thing that happened today. But
we recorded for about 15
minutes, and yeah. I didn't have the machine
on.
No,
we did not record for 15 minutes.
We were talking for 15 minutes. I thought we were recording.
Stephen tricked us into thinking we were recording.
Right, Stephen forgot to press record button.
Is it recording now?
Yes, it's recording now.
Okay, yeah.
So for those of you who don't know it, Anna Vocino is a wonderful, very talented, very professional voiceover person. She's now doing most of the promos for ABC.
Well, I'm the female voice of ABC, but I have to qualify by saying female voice because there are no female. One promo of mine they run 100 of dudes.
Men. Yeah. Right. Okay. So she's the female voice of ABC.
It's a big honor to have been chosen for that because it's not something that's happened in history.
Right. Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In television history, which is a lot shorter than history.
Yes. Yes, this is very true.
Okay.
But it's silly.
So, but here's the irony. Isn't it like really, really ironic that Anna Vocino, which in Italy would literally translate to little voice. Yeah. And here she is. She's a voiceover person.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I know.
That is so weird.
And it's also ironic because I don't have a little voice. I'm loud as fuck.
Right. See, you're going to have to mark this thing
explicit. Yeah.
But you do have a sexy voice.
Thank you.
You look hot.
Thanks. Thanks. Oh, my God.
So I know we already did this, but you can do the Reader's Digest version. What did you guys do today? Because these guys went shopping.
Yes. Anna and I went shopping.
Went into town
into Terlizzi.
I had a mission.
Yes, to get
stracciatella.
To get stomach ache.
Yeah. I was intentionally going to screw up my body by eating some of the most delicious dairy I've ever had in my life, which is the stracciatella cheese from the cheesemonger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's called Caseificio.
Caseificio.
Caseificio is the cheese store. Ufficio is like ufficio, the place.
So it's house place?
House place?
No. See, that's
Casa
what
Ficcio
I
means house place.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it kind
of
does.
Because first of all, it's not casa, it's case. Case Ficcio.
Oh, case
Ficcio. So think about it for a second.
Case place.
Right.
Because you encase cheese?
No.
Too.
No, yes, come on. Folks, listen up. Okay. May I explain this, please?
Yes.
We were trying to think about it.
Okay. I know. Try to think without speaking.
Okay.
That's hard.
It comes from the Latin word for cheese.
Oh, like queso and
exactly.
Kaiser in German.
Right,
got it.
And Kass in Dutch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why
it's not what we thought it was. It's cheese place.
Yeah.
The place of the cheese.
Yeah. Because when I was growing up in an Italian household, we have this round thing to grate the cheese with, right? So it's the grater is on top, and then underneath it is this bowl.
Bowl, yeah.
That the grater fits snugly into.
It's like all one unit?
Yeah, all one unit.
Oh, yeah.
And you grate the cheese on top, and the cheese falls into this bowl. And that's called a gratta curse in dialect. So I always thought it was gratta, great, right? Like the great cheese. And curse, I thought, house. And I thought that was the little house that the cheese got grated into. But it wasn't. It was cheese grater because of casse.
I learned a lot about the dialect today from you.
Yeah. That looks pretty cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. Have you talked about it on the podcast before?
A couple times.
We've mentioned a few things. Yeah.
It's very fascinating.
Yeah. Because it is a different language.
What's fascinating is it also entails the history of the area.
Yeah.
Because whether it's it's a French a French invasion obviously in the area.
So. Well, they're not necessarily invasions. A lot of times they were invited in.
Okay.
But
who would invite French in?
I know, right? You just ran away from them. French, Spaniards, Greeks, of course, the Romans. Who else? Austrians.
Did you say Normans?
Yeah. Normans.
What about the Balkans or the
Croatians? The Saracens.
Is that what they are?
No, Saracens are, Muslims they? From North Africa. Oh, okay. Turks, mostly.
Yeah.
they were here. So it became this polyglot language that one of the funny things about it is when you go to write it, especially like on things today like Facebook, when you have friends in this town, and each town, by the way, even though they're 5 kilometers apart, have a different version of that similar dialect. It's the Barese dialect, the Bari dialect,
mm-hmm.
but each town has different words and different ways of pronouncing it.
Because everybody's kind of in their own little bubble. I mean, not so much anymore, but they were
they
for
used
a while.
To, because you couldn't travel.
Yeah.
No one had a means of travel, really. And, unless it was horse and wagon, but it would take hours to go 5 kilometers and back. So not many people did it. And what I find interesting about all languages is that as you travel through, let's say Europe more than in the U.S., but as you travel through Europe, if you start on the far west coast, which would be like Portugal, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you start traveling east, the language doesn't quickly change like at the border.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the architecture begins to sort of change a little by little until you're into the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to change again and change. Same thing here with the dialects.
Yeah.
The two biggest influences in our dialect are French and Spanish.
Mm. Interesting. I would have thought it would have been Greek for some reason.
No, the Greeks stayed. There are towns down south near Lecce that actually speak a Greek dialect, an ancient Greek.
Even the stores sometimes have a Greek letters on them.
Interesting.
Yeah, because this was Greater Greece. Before the Romans came here, this was part of Greece.
Yeah.
And that's where the olive trees come from. The olive trees here are not indigenous.
Really?
Yeah, they came from Greece.
Interesting.
Like, they didn't walk over or anything. Yeah, people rock
them. I was going to say.
Yeah.
And then look at you guys talking about Italian olive oil.
That's right, right? Liars.
Liars. Liars.
So we went to town.
Yeah.
We learned a little bit about dialects. What I was going to say about the dialects. So when you're on things like Facebook and, with your local friends, you want to write in dialect, because our dialect is also the only language that I've ever heard in my life where when you sit around or you stand around with people who are speaking the dialect, you actually laugh at the language.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's funny. It sounds funny.
It sounds hilarious.
Yeah. And we laugh. And it's also because a lot of them are old words that we remember our grandparents saying.
And I like that you guys are bringing them back.
Exactly. You got to be on your toes. But when you go to write it, then someone will always correct you. That's not how you write it. It's like, wait a minute. How do you know? It's not a written language.
Has anyone done a dictionary of the dialect?
Yes. My mom's cousin, a big used vocabulary. But it's impossible to look up the words because they're all spelled phonetically.
Right.
Because it was never a written language. None of these dialects were written. Because people were illiterate. People didn't go to school. So anything that was formally written, formally written, had to be in either Latin or proper Italian.
If I remember too, the dictionary, it is not written out. There's no, it's all phonetic.
Yeah.
So you actually, like they never say like C-A-T, cat, and then show you the pronunciation. They only show you the pronunciation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because there's no written word.
Because there's no written word. Like, we don't know how to pronounce that. It's just they show you how to pronounce it, but not how to spell it.
So you have to know all your phonetic sounds like schwa.
Yeah.
Because we use the schwa
a lot. Love a schwa. I feel like we need to bring back the schwa.
Yeah.
They were big on schwa education in the 70s, but they're not doing that so much anymore.
No, not anymore. No, it went away with the Latin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I was thought in this area, because of the Schwabians, that the schwa would have come back.
Is Charles Schwab descended from the Schwabians?
Yes. But Schwabians are an actual people.
Oh.
And they ruled Italy.
I don't know. I'm drinking a martini.
Schwabians, the Swabia is one of the regions of Germany. The southwest region of Germany is called Swabia. And they were the Holy Roman Emperors in the 11 and 1200s. The first famous one was Frederick Barbarossa, and the
it's got a good Italian name.
Yeah, and meaning red beard,
mm-hmm.
right? He had a red beard. Mm-hmm. He was a redhead, and then his grandson became probably the most famous Holy Roman Emperor in Italy, Frederick II, who built most of the castles in Italy.
Ah.
So then we went shopping for fish. How was that for a segue?
We went to the cheese guy. We went to the fish guy. Uh-huh. We went to the phone store three times.
Yep.
Was never open. Farmacia. Salami guy.
Uh-huh.
We popped in the butcher shop. Bread guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to go to a different guy.
You have to go to a different store for whatever you're going to buy.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't go to a supermarket unless I really have to.
Yeah. Is there something that you need?
And like for real staples. You know, like I'll go to the cash and carry, sort of like our local Costco.
Yeah.
If I need to buy it, like, you know, 48.
But here's what I like about your supermarket is that you have the gluten-free section.
Yes. And we have great gluten-free products here.
It's government mandated. To have that gluten-free section
in the big
government grocery stores.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Look at who knows something about Italian culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Well, if that's how you look hot.
It's not going to work.
What kind of fish did you buy? Just real quick.
We bought mussels, and we made some steamed mussels, which were delicious.
Amazing.
Tell them what you
put in there.
Yeah, you put them in a skillet, no water. You can add some white wine if you want. But the mussels, as they cook, they throw off all the water, so it makes this wonderful juice that you can then eat with bread, scarpetta, if you eat bread.
If you're of that persuasion.
And I put in some basil. I didn't have any bay leaves on hand because, you know, our bay leaf tree is like 10 feet away, and I just didn't want to go out.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to get too far. You put in lots of cloves of garlic. And our own chili powder, our KTM chili powder.
Which is now available online.
There you go.
Yes. Vinny wants that.
It is spectacular. So then you just let it cook for about 10 or 15 minutes until all the mussel shells are open. Take it off and just chow down.
That's what we did.
Yep.
We ate all of it.
Yep.
Gone. And then but then you got the tuna steak.
Uh-huh.
Salmon steak.
Uh-huh. Salmon fillet and tuna fillet.
Very fresh,
and we made them to sashimi.
I like how there was half a swordfish.
Yeah.
And that's a big-ass fish.
That was a big-ass
half
fish.
Half a swordfish is plop, sitting right there. Giant tuna, like they had already filleted it and cleaned it, but it was like they hadn't cut it into the individual steaks yet. So it was, oh boy, that was like.
Chomp into it.
And then all the like octopus laying around.
Comes back with the fish that are still jumping.
Okay. There was one that was spurting. What was that?
Clams.
Was it clam? It was just in there going.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's offensive.
Not as offensive as the video we shot.
Speaking of spurting,
you guys need to watch this video.
We have a live video. I will link to in the show notes. livingvillacapelli.com/ I think this is going to be 43. I believe. I'm not sure. Go to the show notes, and we'll have a video that we did live video. And little do you know what's going to happen on live video. There was a little bit of a squirting action that happened. It's very funny. So you have to take a look at the video.
Yes. And then when we finished shopping, we decided to rest our weary feet at a local coffee shop. And we sat down and had one each.
We did have a cappuccino before.
You
had an espresso.
Yes.
I'll have an espresso usually too, but I wanted to live a little. And
I can't do cappuccinos anymore. My stomach can't take it.
Yeah, no, obviously mine can't either, and I should not have done that.
What?
Well, how can your stomach? You do dairy.
Not really. No, I don't.
You do cheese, but you just don't do the milk.
But Parmesan is less offensive.
Yes, I can do cheese.
Parmesan won't upset your stomach the way, because it's aged.
And mozzarella doesn't either. Mozzarella doesn't.
Oh, that's good. Mozzarella will hurt me.
That's why I was wondering because that cheese wasn't. Like it wasn't
that aged. Cheese always hurts me.
But I'm saying it wasn't aged, so I'm wondering if that was your problem. Like because
maybe
the French it's cheese so,
it's
didn't
just fresh.
You,
yeah,
the fresh stuff.
Like the French cheese I had was aged
because it was aged.
Yeah,
and it has the cultures or whatever.
Yeah,
maybe it didn't pick that.
Maybe
else.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But I was on a mission to get the stracciatella,
and you got it, baby, and it got you.
It got me right back.
I'm so glad she got it.
It was so because then you got to eat the rest of it. So I was like, I'm done. It's all yours, babe.
So we sat down. We had an Aperol spritz.
Hello.
Oh. Pause.
You have a pause?
Yeah.
Right. We'll be right back.
And we're back.
So Aperol spritz. Yes, we had an Aperol spritz, which is, for those of you who don't know, there are two types of liqueurs, basically, in Italy. One is a digestif, which you imbibe after a meal to help you digest, supposedly.
Yeah.
And the other one is an aperitif, which you imbibe before a meal to get your appetite up and running. So Aperol is one of those. It's similar.
It's an aperitif.
It's an aperitif. It's somewhat similar to Campari.
Even though it has kind of an herbal.
Yeah, but it's been, they're all made from herbs. Because, yeah. Because you know, Italians want to drink things that are made in a healthy way, which I'm sure this isn't, but they think it is because of herbs in it. And they want to drink for a purpose other than getting shit-faced like Americans do.
Right.
So it has to be, I'm not really that hungry, so let's have something to stimulate my appetite.
Yeah.
And then after you eat, I just had a big meal, so do you have something that can help me digest?
Yeah. Do Italians have coffee after the meal?
Yes, coffee, but just not cappuccino.
Nothing with milk. They will do the macchiato, maybe.
Only if someone
what's
like...
What's in a macchiato again?
It's just a drop of milk.
It's like very dry.
I do
okay.
that. I do the milk.
They'll do that only if their stomach can't take just coffee.
Because the bubbling coffee helps you digest. Just yeah. like the same way but, they...
So can I finish the Aperol story, please?
Thank you. Yes.
So Aperol is a much lighter version of Campari. It's somewhat similar. An Aperol spritz is, one-third Aperol, less than one-third Prosecco, and a shot of club soda. Very refreshing.
Delicious.
It's really, really delicious.
I think it's like 3-2-1.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know which one's.
Yeah, that was kind of what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting back to the coffee thing though for a second, I think a lot of you know that Italians love to make fun of Americans when they come to Italy and they have lunch or dinner and they order a cappuccino after lunch or dinner,
right.
And the Italians look at you like you have three heads. So here's the reason why. It's not that it's just a rule that you can't have it. Think of it as kosher law.
Right.
Because after you've had a big meal, do you really want to throw a big cup of warm milk all over that big meal in your stomach?
No.
Probably not.
It's like curdling in your stomach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why they recommend against it.
The limited dairy thing or having your dairy at choice times.
Well, but I think that's what the whole kosher law is and all those laws. It was all about people not getting sick.
But I guess my only question to that is what's the difference between that versus a piece of cheesecake after? I mean...
Cheesecake isn't throwing a bowl of warm milk down your gullet.
But it's still a dairy product you're consuming.
But are they eating cheesecake a lot? Or is it
not a lot, but I'm just saying as an example of the dessert.
Yes, but then by your thinking, why do they have cheese after?
That's true. I mean, I would argue...
Which they usually don't. They usually have cheese first.
Yeah. A lot of times they eat the cheese, supposedly it's the cultures and the cheese.
And most people in Italy, unless it's a Sunday, won't have dessert after lunch. You'll have dessert after dinner.
Oh, really?
Yes, but not after lunch, unless it's Sunday.
Okay.
Sundays you do it because,
they actually rarely have dessert. It's usually a special event.
And you usually have it way after the meal is finished, after you have your fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
And all that
stuff. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, I want to move on to Anna and talking about her cookbook.
Yes, Anna has a cookbook.
Here we go.
Anna has a cookbook.
Because Paul and I have had the privilege of seeing a little bit of the advanced copy.
Privilege? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
You guys helped me.
No, it's
so much fun.
You guys
should get credit.
No. It's fun. So what it's going to be called, it's Eat Happy. The subtitle is, oh my gosh.
Gluten-free, grain-free, low-carb recipes for a joyful life.
Yeah.
There it is. That's the element. Elevator speech.
My copywriter friend sitting with me at this table helped me with that title.
And of course, we're like, my grammar nerd comes out. I'm like, does it need a hyphen or not? I need a hyphen.
I know.
Do we initial cap it or not initial cap these? What are we? We're like, it's ridiculous what you go into.
I'm sending a revision of the cover and we'll see. Because I can't make decisions without you guys.
I'm never leaving.
The cookbook's coming out. It's been a labor of love. It was basically when Vinny and I started this podcast together, the Angry Strainer podcast, of which you guys are a fabulous sponsor. We figured out pretty quickly that Vinny does not know how to cook. He will burn water. Like, he does not know anything about it. So, and I had a cooking blog already. I was already cooking gluten-free because I've had celiac, diagnosed with celiac since 2002. And so when he told me to, you know, his whole thing is NSNG, cutting out the sugars and the grains, no sugars, no grains. It kind of was a natural progression for me to come up with what's going to be the recipe book that people would want to get. Once Vinny says, eat this way, what do you do?
Yeah.
Buy Anna's book. Hopefully. We'll see. So I already have a whole bunch of recipes that are in my repertoire because I love to cook. And so then I adjusted them to be sugar and grain free. And then I came up with a whole bunch more, and that's what the cookbook is. And I'm already starting on the second cookbook because I'm a glutton for punishment.
Wow.
I cannot believe you are.
I know.
Because this has been two and a half years.
It has been. It took a long time. It took longer. I mean, but part of that, you know what, to be honest with you, part of it was just flat out fear. Like, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. This is crazy. So having to get over
it's
that.
It's overwhelming, too.
It's overwhelming.
I'm sure, yeah. Right.
I wanted to make sure I tested the recipes. There's a common thing in the States where this happens a lot with magazines. Have you ever made a recipe out of a magazine and you know you're good in the kitchen and the recipe doesn't set up right or doesn't cook, you know what I mean? It doesn't work right. Or you can look at the recipe and go, no, I can do this thing to it and it'll be much better.
Mm-hmm.
It's because oftentimes, especially in magazines, really, not necessarily cookbooks because they're supposed to be tested more for cookbooks, but they don't put a lot of testing into them. And it was important to me to test things a lot because I don't want to put any, it's mortifying to me to put something out there that wouldn't work.
Right.
For people, it has to be kind of foolproof.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a home cook. I cook very similar to the way you guys do. Like, what do we have? What's going on? And then you realize, oh, that's a recipe. I better write that down. So there's not going to be, and also to presentation, I'm not like cutting a filet and then like doing the creme over it or the sauce with the spoon, like a, you know how they make.
Right.
I don't do the, I'm home cook, easy recipes to make for your family.
Yeah.
So that it's just eating real food.
But she says that, but all of her photos of the food are beautiful.
Well,
I mean, they're beautiful.
I mean, how can you make something in a crock pot look beautiful?
That's true.
It's tough to do that.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
So you just kind of make it look appetizing. Like, ooh, I would like to reach in that crock pot and scoop it on my plate and eat it. You know?
We just did that recently. What recipe were we doing? Let's not take a picture. And then I did the recipe for it, and I'm like, I don't have a photo of it.
Yeah, you have to have a photo.
But it was so not really appetizing because it was this pile of whatever it was. I don't even remember what it was that we made.
Right. Well, the trick is even if you have a cast iron or something, put it in that and take like an area, you know, overhead, with the server spoon or whatever in it.
Because if the food doesn't look good, at least make the plate look good.
Yeah.
Use a pretty plate or a pretty pot.
Absolutely. And sometimes it doesn't look good plated because sometimes if it's a casserole, casseroles do not look good on a plate. You slop a casserole. It's tough to make it look good. So, it's...
No.
And also parsley is your friend or cilantro or whatever good green garnish is.
Cilantro, by the way, is something that here in Italy, they absolutely 100%, every single one of them, hate it.
Really?
They hate cilantro.
I love it.
They'll use coriander once in a while, but cilantro,
but like the coriander seeds ground,
But cilantro,
but they don't do fresh. Which in France, they call it fresh coriander.
Oh, okay. No,
they don't even call it cilantro. They call it fresh coriander.
Because
it's the same thing.
Here they don't even have it.
Yeah.
And to them, they say it smells like stink bugs.
My friend said, it tastes like a cleaning product, and I get that. It does.
Well, it's actually proven.
That's the same thing as the grapefruit story you were telling today.
No.
It's a genetic thing.
Interesting.
It's actually been proven. It's like whatever the people who don't like it, it tastes like soap to them.
Well, yes.
It's actually proven. They don't have the taste buds for it. Something out.
That's how we were talking about grapefruits. To me, grapefruits taste like dirt. And that's a genetic thing that's been proven. Some people have a thing. So you won't find any grapefruit recipes in my cookbook. However, what I encourage people to do is substitute things. Like I get tweets all the time. Like the pistachio coriander crusted salmon looks great. And it's a very simple recipe to make. Can I make it with chicken? Of course, do it. Like, do it and substitute. Try it out. Experiment in the kitchen. I like it when people do. Recipes always evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take it and you're going to figure out a better way that works for you.
I always want to say, it's like a roadmap or a guideline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a rule book.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, if you want more salt, add more salt. That's a bad example. But if you really
the salt thing is, we were talking about that yesterday, but that's an important distinction to make. When people are not comfortable in the kitchen, they have to have exact specific. So I'm very specific in the recipes about measurements.
Yeah,
however, you do season as you go along, which is what you, and taste. You should always taste at every step that you can, provided you're not eating raw meat or something like that.
Which is why I don't like baking.
Well, baking's tough because
you can't taste.
And if you do, you're eating weird raw stuff, and you don't know. And it's not going to taste like that when it comes out of the oven.
Speaking of salt, you also have to be careful what kind of salt you use, because like the salt in the States, which is I guess mined salt from underground, is not as salty as the salt we use here. All the salt that we use here is sea salt.
I only use sea salt. I don't use the iodized.
No, iodized anymore, never used, because iodized is only for people who live far away from the sea or the ocean.
But it was salt is iodized salt.
In the U.S. probably.
Yeah.
Because they started putting iodine in the salt for people who were getting goiters.
Yeah. Right.
Because they were low in iodine in their body. So they started putting iodine in the salt. But if you live near salt air, sea salt air, you don't need iodine.
That's interesting.
And iodine, like when you don't use iodized salt for a while, and then if you taste it, it has a little bitter taste to it. It has like this slightly bitter taste.
Well, speaking of salt, just on the side track, that we talked about this because Anna didn't even know we had this product, our red wine sea salt. Mm-hmm. You guys, I don't know, we've talked about it on the podcast, mentioned it, but
red wine infused sea salt.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and it's a beautiful pink color.
It's a purple color.
Purpley pink.
Yeah.
Raspberry almost.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So what? Tell me, because luckily I've barked at you to send me home.
No, I'm
going to. But how am I going to use that? What am I going to use that in?
A finishing salt. I use it finishing salt. I mean,
you put it in a dressing or.
You know what actually helped me more than anything? It does have a little bit of that flavoring.
What flavoring? Wine. Red wine. Our own red wine. We use it.
It helps me. It not only is it pretty, but it also helps me not do too much.
Like, because you can see it.
You can see it. Well, that's why I use the pink Himalayan salts when I season stuff. But see, here's my question. Can I salt a steak?
Yes.
Because I like to do just a little bit of balsamic on one side of the steak and then maybe do some of that.
Yeah.
And then the other side do just regular salt and pepper.
Yeah, you can just so you would.
Oh,
I like it on meat. I've done it on meat, vegetables. I mean, pretty much anywhere you would.
And speaking of balsamic for a second, you know, balsamic vinegar is not much different than extra virgin olive oil when it comes to buying it in a store.
Right. Because they tamper with it?
Not only do they tamper with it. I mean, they tamper with olive oil, and a lot of the stuff that's in extra virgin olive oil that makes that product not extra virgin even close.
Don't even get me started.
Exactly. But the same thing with balsamic vinegar. You know, those bottles that you buy, or those half-gallon jugs that you buy at Costco that says balsamic vinegar, it's not balsamic vinegar at all.
What is it?
It's vinegar with molasses in it. Yes, it's molasses.
I think
it's sugar and molasses to give it that sweetness. Because real balsamic vinegar, first of all, if you go on our website, you'll see real aged balsamic vinegar from Modena, award-winning balsamic vinegar.
Just buy that.
But you don't use that on like salads and stuff.
You
use drops of it on like ice cream or desserts.
Why can't you use that in a salad?
Because it's too expensive, first of all. And it doesn't give you the flavor that you expect from vinegar. Because it's not as tart as vinegar. It's much sweeter.
That's what you're buying in the store. It does have a purpose for salads, because that's what it's.
But it's not balsamic.
It's a sweet vinegar, basically.
Interesting.
But it's not.
It's a sugared vinegar.
It's a sugared vinegar. So if you're going to make a salad.
Here's what I do for a balsamic dressing,
which is why people like balsamic vinegar on their salad.
Right.
Because of the sweetness.
To me, it can be a little overwhelming.
Yes.
So I actually cut. So if you do the 3-to-1 ratio that you do for your salad dressing. The 3 tablespoons of olive oil and the 1 tablespoon of the vinegar, I will put something else. So I'll do about half a tablespoon of balsamic and then half of red wine vinegar or something, some other vinegar to kind of cut it.
But real balsamic vinegar has no added sugar. It's all wine.
Right.
Must basically that they have what they call a battery of, small oak barrels. And you start with the big one. And you leave the bunghole open.
Yeah.
So that it evaporates. And then after a year, you move it down to the next one so that there's less air in it. And that evaporates, then bring it down. It's usually like the shortest amount of time for real balsamic vinegar is 5 years, I believe.
So. Wow.
It might be better.
So what are they putting in this Costco horseshit?
Molasses.
I know, but what's the... vinegary flavor? Is it just it's cheap vinegar?
Yes, it's like white wine vinegar or apple it's vinegar.
Oh, so they're using the molasses for the coloring agent too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Which
I wonder about that for NSNG. I wonder. I've never looked at the label. Does the religious flavor? It doesn't list it, do they?
No way. I'm gonna start looking in the grocery store now.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Right?
They don't list that cottonseed oil is in the cheap olive oil. So why would they have to list that molasses was in there?
It's the same thing that we found out here with bottled water. In the U.S., you're supposed to list the ingredients, all the minerals that are in that bottled water.
Oh, they don't do that.
But they don't. Yeah. So when we came here, my mother, who will only drink bottled water, she started seeing all these minerals listed on the label, and she started freaking out. Oh, look, there's salt in here. There's this in it. There's magnesium. There's this. It's like, yeah, that's what mineral water, you know, real mineral water is.
Well, originally it was called, spring I remember water. In the 80s, everyone called it mineral water. Exactly. We didn't call it bottled water.
In France and in Italy.
Eau mineral.
Right, but they market it as helping you digest, meaning it helps you poop.
Because it has the electrolytes in it.
It has all that stuff in it. All minerals. But in the U.S.
That's good for poop.
In the U.S., if you tell people that, you know, it'll help you poop, they'll stay away from it. It's like, ooh, that's disgusting. Yeah. And they don't list the ingredients.
I love all things that help me poop.
Exactly, me too.
Better out than in, I say.
Okay, segue. This is not.
No. I just want to say that there's one other thing that Italians hate in terms of drinks or food.
Yeah.
Tomato juice.
I've never gotten that.
They,
why do you want to drink tomato juice anyway?
No.
Bloody Marys.
Oh, well, that's true. That was good. You made me a really good Bloody Mary yesterday.
Thanks, Sue. We have the best Bloody Mary mix.
I'll link to this. I'll link to this.
Bob's No Problem. It's called. A friend of mine, David Lucas in Florida, has been making it about 40 years. David Lucas is famous for he is the man who added the cowbell to Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Fear the Reaper. He's the cowbell.
Which subsequently was the sketch with Will Ferrell and Christopher Walken, the more cowbell.
Right. That's right, on Saturday Night Live. But Bob's No Problem is the best Bloody Mary mix because it doesn't have tomato juice in it, it's just a concentrate with all the flavors. Italians don't like Bloody Marys or tomato juice for one reason, I believe. As soon as they taste tomatoes, they say, where's the pasta?
Ah, interesting.
They can't understand tomatoes without pasta or salad.
Yeah. It is a strange. I mean, again, it's weird how culturally you grew up with something and it's acceptable. But
here's the question that I have. This is going to be outrageous sounding in light of what you just said. My husband's grandmother, who came over from Italy, from north of Rome, passed down, which now he doesn't even make this recipe anymore because the one that I learned from my family doesn't have, so it has tomato paste and then tomato juice instead of using like
tomato sauce.
But I wonder if that's maybe like an Americanized thing because it was less expensive to get.
It probably is
because if you're out of luck with tomato juice here, I did learn this.
Tomato juice is not easy to find here.
No. You basically take tomato sauce and you
water it down.
Yes. It's like 1-to-1.
Do it in the Vitamix and just.
No, you do it in water. You just pour it 1-to-1. I think it's 1-to-1. Just add water to it and that makes tomato juice.
Right.
I never have Bloody Marys, and that Bloody Mary mix, that one you made yesterday, oh my God. That was like having a meal.
Yeah. Bob's No Problem. Look for it. It's amazing.
Really good.
So what's your favorite recipe in the book? I know they're all your babies. See, this is a good question.
My favorite. Oh gosh, I need to get prepared for this.
Oh wait, okay. So come on. Yeah. So while she's thinking, I will tell you guys for this show notes here, I'm gonna have a link. It's a downloadable PDF of my 5 favorite recipes of Anna's. This is before the cookbook, so this is all based on her blog. But I have my 5 favorites. So if you guys want to go on, you can download that.
Anything zucchini noodles, I love.
Zoodles
with the Paderno spiralizer, by the way, invented by Italians.
Well, Paderno, hello.
Paderno. Oh, yeah. Anything, I like the cauliflower rice, using cauliflower as a substitute for rice. So I figured out how to make butternut squash risotto, but using cauliflower rice. It cooks in far shorter of a time because you don't have to, you're not absorbing the liquid slowly because there's no starch in the cauliflower to absorb. Yeah. That's really good. My most popular recipes are generally whatever is substituting like a comfort favorite, like the fathead pizza crust, which I call the low carb pizza crust in the recipe. There's a cauliflower pizza crust. So it's basically taking the grains out of a pizza crust. Those by far are the highest ranked, but
they are really good.
I love making a pan fried steak. Like if I'm at home cooking, I don't make comfort food at home. I don't, I'll do it for the cookbook, but I make a pan fried steak and a bunch of vegetables.
That's comfort food to me. That's kind of comfort, but that's what I'm saying.
Like people, when people are first giving up processed grains and sugars, the hardest thing that they don't want to see, like to me, I love making a beautiful, one of my favorite salmon dishes. I love the pistachio crusted coriander salmon. I love the salmon that I make with a lemon Dijon basil sauce. And I just literally just grind it in the Vitamix, pour it over, and then grill it. Like, it's just easy. That and a bunch of vegetables I love. But maybe someone needs to have a little more. The sausage zucchini bake is amazing. I saute whatever sausage that you want to get, whatever you have on hand.
The broccoli was a popular one, wasn't it?
Bacon broccoli. That's a hugely popular.
I mean, bacon and broccoli. I mean, yeah, exactly. But come on.
But you definitely have to have like a squirt of lemon juice on that to freshen it up. And then you don't realize that you're eating all these stalks of broccoli. You know, it's good to get kids to eat that. In fact, Kendra Barthel, who's a friend of ours now from the thing, her son, she caught her son 2 years ago in his underwear trying to Skype me to tell me how much he liked the broccoli. He was so excited. And she's like, you cannot Skype women in your underwear.
No.
You have to put pants on for that.
Yes.
That's when things progress. Then you can wear your underwear.
Then you can.
Yeah. So I'm glad that she's teaching our future youth of America to be gentlemen. I like cooking fresh stuff, whatever's in season too.
Yes.
It's the same thing here. I mean, if I go to the vegetable or fruit stand and they have fruit that is in season, I know it's not ripened on our trees yet. It's like it'll be like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, early.
Right.
Like, excuse me, where are these from? Oh, well, they're from Spain. Or they're from Israel.
Like, interesting. They're bringing them from that far.
And at Christmas time, that's why people, these lunatics here, they'll spend like $20 for a pound of cherries because they come from Chile.
Right.
It's like, first of all, I don't need to pollute the planet by shipping cherries here. Mm. And I can wait till the springtime for my cherries.
But what's great about this, not that they're bringing these in, but that the fruit vendor is honest about it.
Yes. Yeah.
So that you're not just buying something. They could have easily said Molfetta, the nearby town, whatever. They could have said something, but they're honest about it.
I'm sorry, but a cherry in winter, even if it's from a place where it is in season, by the time it gets here, it's not as good.
No.
You want to get in season as close to where you are.
You want to pick them off the trees.
Yeah.
You want to steal them off your neighbor's trees.
Because they had cherry off the tree yesterday.
Yes, that's
that was
right.
Good.
Off our tree in the garden.
Yeah. You'd have to pick them when they're not really ripe. Because there's no way it would last the trip.
Exactly.
I mean, here, when we get them, they last by 3 days. They're already going bad. I'm like, screw it. Like I haven't gotten to make the jam yet. I need to make the jam because they're all going bad.
Ooh, talk about the onion jam you guys are going to make.
Ooh, the red onion jam.
We have
two crates of red onions behind Anna.
They look beautiful.
Yes.
Hey, onions.
Yes.
From Calabria.
Yes.
We did a whole podcast on this. I'll link to it. No, we did do a whole, and I'll link to that. But
it is one of our best products.
Yes,
it's just an amazing product.
Yeah. Yummy.
Mm. So you put it on cheese or salami or prosciutto.
Oh, we did buy some good salami with the peppercorn in it, which was the mild Napoli.
What they call Napoli salami,
We did. Is that called Napoli salami because of the style?
Yes, the style.
And then is it calabrese? Or what is the
calabrese would be the spicy one.
Right? That was so good. Yeah. And then my favorite, mortadella.
Mortadella with pistachio in it.
It's so good, guys. It's mortadella.
Like, it's like meat, but it's like melt in your mouth, like creamy meat.
I used to hate it.
And they slice it so you can see through it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so thin.
Well,
basically, if you don't know what mortadella is, it's bologna, for lack of a better example.
Boar's Head has a decent mortadella, but you have to get them at the deli to slice it really thin.
Otherwise,
but
it's
this
just,
was
can't.
Beyond
yeah.
anything
it's
that I've ever.
It's amazing how good it is. I mean, Paul and I, neither one of us
ever
liked it.
Like, and
all of a sudden, we're
like, "What did you say? Like a foot in diameter? This thing?"
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah, but I've seen them bigger than that. I've seen them like 2 feet in diameter.
Yeah, how do you even have a cutter for that?
Oh, they have these huge cutters, and it'll be longer than this table.
It's huge.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Could I take one of those home, or they would never let me through customs.
No, they won't let you through customs. But the mortadella is also really good if it's cut up into cubes and just slightly heated up in a pan and a skillet, and you have it for breakfast.
Quote unquote. Fried bologna. Didn't people used to
I was going
to
say, bologna? I love fried bologna sandwiches. Yeah. that was a staple of my youth.
I never had them.
You put a little mayo and a little mustard and a little Wonder sounds white really bread and fried the bologna. It's really good.
I always hated bologna. Yeah. Always, my whole life. So when I was in college, I had this roommate, Bobby Cusick. Bobby, if you're listening, we're Facebook friends as well now. He and I think another roommate, I had fallen asleep. It was the middle of summer in our apartment in college. And really hot. I had no shirt on, but I fell asleep on the sofa. I woke up. They had covered my entire torso in slices of bologna.
That's like your nightmare.
Oh, it was disgusting.
Come to life.
It was so disgusting. It was like slimy bologna all over me.
Oh my God. Well, I think that's a good note to end on.
Yes, I think so.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Please remember to hit subscribe on your podcast player, whatever it is, so you never miss another episode. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter on our site, livingvillacapelli.com, because that way, actually, guys, when Anna's book really, I mean, when the pre-sales come out and when the actual book comes out, I can send you guys a note on the newsletter so that you see that. And it'll be in the show notes, but I think that'll be a more accurate way to keep in contact with us.
You go to villacapelli.com and buy our olive oil and all and the red wine sea salt especially.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for all your support. Arrivederci.
Ciao.